Welcome back to the Diana Plus Show with your guest host, Hal Shurtleff, and listening to WSMN 1590 on the AM dial, Nashua's Talk. And I have a special guest, well, all my guests are special, but Janine Turner. I'm going to read the little bio that was sent to me by one of her staffers. Janine is an Emmy and three-time Golden Globe-nominated actress known to millions of fans for her role as Maggie O'Connell in the hit CBS Emmy award-winning television show Northern Exposure, TV series Friday Night Lights, cliffhanger movie with Sylvester Stallone, and many more film and television credits. Acting is in Janine's only passion or accomplishments. She is a four-time published author. She is the creator of Front Porch Philosophy and Umbrella Outreach, including Janine Turner's God in the Go Minute, a daily one-minute scripture-based podcast, lively with a homespun feel. She is the founder and the co-chair of the National Nonpartisan Foundation, Constituting America, and that's what we're going to be mainly focusing on today. I do want to mention that I happen to have watched the Gosnell movie, Gosnell, America's biggest serial killer, and I actually showed it to a number of groups in northern Maine and around this region here in greater Boston. And Janine, that you had a very short role, but I think it was one of the most powerful parts of the movie. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, it was, it's great to be on your show, by the way. Hello.
Yes. Jeanette got a hold of us. She heard about Camp Constitution, I think it was about 2 months ago. And she said, can Janine come to speak at camp or teach a class? I said, yeah, I think we could squeeze her in. I was aware of your organization before. You and your daughter are involved, called Constituting America. And I'd like to ask you the question. I usually ask questions when people are involved in what I call freedom activism. What motivated you to start this organization?
Well, you know, I've always had a love of, that's a good question, of the founding fathers. Interestingly, you know, I think I do believe we're born with certain purposes and passions. You know, we have a little, I might have a little founding father on my shoulder, John Adams probably, or George Washington, who's supposedly related to through his grandfather, which is really kind of cool, isn't
you do,
it?
You do, have ancestry. Yeah.
Ancestry.com reveals all kinds of cool things. But, you know, when I was 3 years old, not 3 years old, but in third grade, I looked up at my father and said, Dad, if our founding fathers were to come back today, what would they be most disappointed about? What third grader asked that question, you know?
No, and usually it's for milk and cookies or...
You know, take me to the, you know, ballpark. But the, and in fifth grade, I had a wonderful teacher, which is why I believe people who take time to educate others, whether it's officially in school or as you're doing, can be so incredibly meaningful. He loved the Revolutionary Era, and we spent the entire year, he combined the art with the history. We rehearsed and learned all about the characters in the play, the musical, 1776.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, which is, if any of your listeners, if you haven't seen it.
I actually saw a live production of the original cast in Wisconsin some years ago.
No.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great performance. And the scene where, no, they didn't actually, as you know, they didn't sign the document until August 2nd. But you have to take a little bit of license, historical license. But just when they clanged, the bell rang, and I said, I was getting a little misty when I saw that.
It's
very moving, you know.
And it really portrays John Adams in a wonderful, wonderful way. I think he gets, you know, and you're from the Boston area, you know, he's from, well, you say Quincy,
he's
right?
Right outside of Boston. He's my second favorite next to George Washington, John Adams.
I know, me too. And I love John Adams. And when I visited his, the church of the president there in Quincy, and they took us downstairs and they opened the door and there was his, you know, his crypt with Abigail Adams and John Quincy and his wife Catherine, right?
Have you been to the house?
I burst into tears. I was so moved that there he was, you know. And I did visit the house. Yeah, it's really amazing.
And the chair and he died in is right there.
What's that?
Oh, he gets a bum rap. I think it was over the Alien Sedition Act. And I think if people understood the background of that, they would have been a little less hard on him. But here's a guy... that he was a motivator behind the Declaration of Independence. If there wasn't,
he most certainly was.
Then he went to Holland and he borrowed money from the Dutch. That alone is.
And almost died doing it.
That's quite a feat, getting money from the Dutch, right?
And he got sick.
Then he came home and wrote the Massachusetts Constitution, was a model. The U.S. Constitution was not modeled completely by that, but similar to that.
Yes, exactly. He was brilliant. I just think he was actually brilliant. We wouldn't have had the Declaration of Independence without him.
And
he's the one who picked George Washington.
He
suggested George Washington to be the general.
I mean,
and he suggested Thomas Edison. Jefferson should write it.
That's right. He did so much. And at first, those first few years were tough years. The country was a brand new country. And then he also he had leniency. The Whiskey Rebellion. A lot of his staffers said, they should have been tried for treason, and he pardoned them. That's the mercy. It was mercy.
And he didn't jump into another war either.
That's right. So he was, I think, a great man. And that's something that so many young people are missing. And I think that's why you started Constitution America.
It is. To finish that answer of yours, sorry, so long-winded. But I love the Founding Fathers. I had appreciation for them. My father was a graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was raised with that sort of love of country. And then I read the book, The 5,000-Year Leap.
Oh, that's by Cleon Skousen. I heard him speak.
I really don't remember at this moment anything about it.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, I called my friend Kathy Gillespie, and I'm like, we need to educate the kids. Because, and the way I do it now is I really focus on why the Constitution is important in really specific ways. How to utilize the First Amendment, how to utilize the government, why the legislative branch is first, and the president's not the most important person. And, all these...
That's right.
I say I want to empower you to understand how to utilize the government for yourself in a very productive way. And that's also to point out some of the very important checks and balances that are in our Constitution. So I absolutely love it. We kind of blend our foundation, we blend the arts, and we also promote these kids' actual public service announcements and their songs. And their STEM works as well. We opened it up to STEM. And we get mentors for them. But also we take their works and we hire companies to promote their works. So our students, it's their works that are on national television. It's their works that are on the national radio. We really enjoy what we do. And I working with the kids and adults even, talking about the Constitution. I've given over like 400 speeches now. So it's like 375, whatever the number
is. And you're just getting started, I hope.
Right.
Well, one of the things I wanted to mention, I had an eighth grade teacher, and I went to a public school in Boston, not necessarily the best choice to learn history, Mrs. Mm-hmm. Wolf, and she, just like your teacher, she had I couldn't tell you if she was a liberal or a conservative, but we had to memorize dates, we had to memorize parts of the Constitution, and she had a love of the country. And the last time I threw a spitball was in her class, because she looked at me and she said, "Harold, I'm surprised at you." Boy, was I so ashamed of myself. I let her down, her prize student.
Goodness.
So I think you had someone similar like that in your life.
You said a key word there, which I think is really interesting. You said you couldn't tell if she was a conservative or a liberal, and I think that's the bum, use that word again, but we said for John Adams, but that's the misinterpretation of the Constitution, in that people think it's a partisan document. And when I educate about this, I say, wait a minute, parties didn't even exist
when
it was written.
That's right.
And it's for everybody. And of course, I also laugh, when you've got a Republican in the office, the Constitution is the Democrat's favorite thing in the whole world, and vice versa.
Right.
You've got a Democrat president, the Republicans love the Constitution because everybody knows that it's preventing that, men are not angels, as they said in the Federalist Papers. It's preventing that power-hungry grab. So it's a wonderful document, and I think my biggest challenge, and I give examples of this, and say, if someone says that they don't like the Constitution, which someone did to me once on a radio host,
mm-hmm.
I just simply asked the host, I said, "Really, you don't like it? Which part? Which part do you not like?"
And they didn't know what to say.
Answer me.
I was on a show up in Maine some years ago, in Portland, Maine, and the host was, he looked like Castro's illegitimate son. I mean, the guy was so far to the left, it was crazy. And one of his friends called in and said, "The Constitution was written, 200 and so many years ago for a white Eurocentric males and so forth, so it should be repealed and abolished." So I said to him, what do we abolish first? Which amendment should we take out first? I said, the First Amendment? The one that protects the right to speech, the right to assemble, and he didn't want to hear that. I said, what about the Eighth Amendment? He didn't know what that was. I said, cruel and unusual punishment. I said, you know, they used to draw and quarter people. I said, should we bring that back? Well, no. I said, sir, you've been a victim of a cliche. You've never bothered to even read it and to understand it. It sounded good. Hey, if it was written up many years ago, it must be a bad thing. Then I challenged him. I said, if it was written in 1848, would it still be valid? He said, no, it wouldn't be. I says, well, thank you. You just repealed the Communist Manifesto, which was also written by a Eurocentric white male.
So. Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, they gave us the foundation knowing that things would have to be changed. You know, they knew that slavery would have to be abolished. They knew that women would eventually want to vote. They knew, but they knew they gave us the principles after much research, you know, that where Greece failed, you know, where Rome right. failed, and they gave us this great basic template. But they gave us this out, you know, to change with the eras, with the amendment process. And you know, the interesting thing about the amendments, when amendments they stick, except for prohibition, right? But they're not like a law that's passed that could be reversed and all this. And it's a shame that everyone has forgotten this wonderful thing called the amendment process. That's what repealed, of course, slavery and gave women the right to vote. So many amazing amendments. And so to throw it all out.
That's right.
We have this great opening. And nobody knows about the Convention of States, which I think is one of the most amazing things in the world, because I know there's a theory out there where people are afraid of it. However, I always quote the Patrick Henry, you know, what are we going to do, lie supinely on our back clutching the elusive phantom of hope, or are we going to be a people of action? You know, what I love about the Convention of States is that if Congress won't balance the budget or won't limit their terms or won't do what we know they need to do, we can go call our own Convention of States through the state legislatures and do it ourselves. So there's that amazing tool as well.
Well, the founders made the process to amend very difficult for a very good reason, because if it was easy to do, we would have amended it out of existence, because there's been, you know, mm-hmm. literally hundreds. And as far as the Article 5 Convention, I have a number of reasons why I think it may not be the soundest thing, but because we live in such an era of constitutional illiteracy that the delegates, I would fear that very few of them would have the same values of the ones who gave us this Constitution back in 1787.
Mm-hmm. You know, balance. They say they will pinpoint it through the state legislature, but
the problem with that is it's not binding, because as you know, Article 5 says that states, the only job of a state legislator is, the first job would be to actually apply for one, and they may never get a chance to vote on any proposed amendments, because Congress can create ratifying committees. In fact, they did that with the 21st Amendment. They knew there were some dry states that would not repeal the 18th, including Utah, especially Utah. And so mm-hmm. what they did was they said, let's have ratifying conventions. And when they did that, it was
the only time they did that for prohibition.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think Utah was one of the states that actually passed it. So, but I think the problem is getting people to obey what's already there. And, you know, James Madison was very clear in one of the Federalist Papers where he said that the powers are to Congress or to the federal level are few and defined. Everything else is left up to the people. But it's our job.
Well, that's why they didn't think they needed a Bill of Rights.
That's right. Exactly.
Wait a minute. You have enumerated powers of what you can do. We're not telling you what you can't do.
That's right. And the thing is, we've usurped that, as you know. When you hear a debate, either at the presidential level or even congressional level debates, very seldom is the word Constitution ever brought up. It's never mentioned.
Where is it never mentioned?
During a debate. You know, when you listen to a presidential debate or a mm-hmm, debates mm-hmm. of local members of Congress. I had an mm-hmm. interesting experience. One of my daughters goes to Liberty University. Last June, it was all-day orientation. Went to a minor league baseball game there in Lynchburg that evening, and there was a lady running for office, passing out her pamphlets, running for Congress. And I asked her, I said, I'll have a little fun with her, see if she can answer any questions. And I said, where do you find the job description of a member of the House of Representatives? She looked at me like I had two heads. She couldn't answer it, so I rephrased it. Mm. I said, where would you find the duties and responsibilities of a member of the House? And she said, online? And I thought, wow. No, I usually keep copies with me.
Section 8.
Yeah, that's it. You know, the Constitution.
Article 1, Clause. Yeah, Section 8. Yeah.
That's right. So that's where you find the duties and the job description. And she didn't know. And then I, you know, Mitt Romney was, that was a lady that used to work for Mitt Romney. She was running for the U.S. Senate in Massachusetts. And good, well-intentioned person. And I asked her a question about the trade issue. She didn't know. But she thought she was qualified because she had worked for Mitt Romney and she ran the state lottery commission and she's a good Republican. But she didn't know the Constitution. So I...
Well, I'll give you another great example of when this happened. And I wrote a petition about this. With the Iranian deal, I mean, you know, and I teach this to the kids because it's an example of the subtleties of how when we don't pay attention, you know, we're not going to have this like Hitler movement, I don't think, where we have this leader come in and persuade all of us. I think it's going to be much more subtle than that. And this is a wonderful example. I mean, according to the Federalist Papers, a treaty is any agreement with a foreign nation of any sort. That's how it's described, any agreement. But both Republican and Democrat presidents have changed the names of these foreign agreements to executive agreements.
That's right.
Treaties. And so they don't have to ratify them anymore. And so they had the Iranian agreement, this executive agreement, which is really a treaty, and they've called it another name so it didn't have to be ratified. So what they passed a bill to look at it, which gave the power right back to the president.
That's amazing.
Which is why we don't have it that way in the first place. It was very specifically the Senate only ratifies, and if they
two-thirds
say no, it cannot go back to the
president. That's right. That's right.
And these are the subtleties that people don't understand, that people go, oh, okay, executive agreement. You know, and meanwhile, they're making all these treaties all around, both Republicans and Democrats.
You look at NAFTA.
There's no check.
NAFTA was an agreement, not a treaty. It should have been a treaty.
That's a good, you know, all these things.
Paris Accords that Obama, he basically made this agreement with foreign governments without any Senate oversight and promising shut all of our coal mines down and reduce our carbon footprint to fight something called climate change. Meanwhile, we're going to give billions of dollars to other countries. And when Trump rightfully said, "Hey, we're out of this thing. This is not even a treaty. This is not even an agreement. It's totally unconstitutional." He didn't say it in so many words, and people are livid. Oh my goodness, Obama negotiated this. It's something that's it's unconstitutional.
But he's not just a Democrat. You know, it's Democrats and Republicans that do these.
Oh, absolutely. Well, look at war. We haven't declared one of the questions, a little 10-question quiz I give at homeschool shows or information tables at various venues, is where does the power to declare war come from? And most people say the president. I say, well, you know, the founders thought declaring war is
Congress.
An awesome thing. It's Congress. So when was the last time we declared war? And most people think Gulf One, Gulf Two. I say Pearl Harbor right after World War II. But we've been in all these so-called police actions. So I take out my Constitution, show me in the index where you see police action. And, of course, they can't. But we accept that.
Well, it's the resolution during the Nixon era that gave the president power.
There was a War Powers Act, which actually you don't have to declare war necessarily to commit soldiers. But if you're going to – it's going to be a long-term thing and there's going to be hundreds of thousands, I think you ought to have a declaration of war. I'm not in favor of war necessarily, but I want to make sure – I served in the military. I want to make sure that if I'm going to be in harm's way, I want my government, I want my back in my gut. This is a real war.
Not just one person. Well, but they don't want to run away Congress either. And I think that's why I like the Convention of States. And I totally get your worries about it. But I mean, look what's happening in Congress right now. There's such a divide in our country. It may get to the point that we all have to kind of pull it back ourselves because look at it. I mean, the more divided we are. I mean, the amazing thing is, here we come from all these different cultures, right?
Yes.
Every continent in the world has come, you know, migrated to America. And the beautiful thing that we've been able to do is to respect each other's cultures in the past and to believe that we're Americans and to find some common ground. And so on the one hand, why do we expect everybody to think the same when we all come from these amazingly different cultures?
It'd be a very boring place, wouldn't it?
We should all have civil conversations and learn to find what's best for the country. And George Washington said this in his farewell address, he said that the party system would be the demise of America because people would care more about the party than about being American.
And that's what we see. I just had an elected a gentleman that was on before you who was a two-term state rep, only 30 years of age at this time. And a lot of times they vote whatever the party leadership tells them to vote, not what's the right way to vote, but what the party says. And if you don't vote the party line, you're out of a job, you lose your committee assignment, and you don't get the backing. So they go along as much as they can, and that's not why they were sent there. And that's a real problem. I think we have so much ignorance at the congressional level, the voters. You know, I like this quote by John Adams. I mentioned this earlier in the last segment. He wrote a letter to the militia officers of Massachusetts while he was in office, and he said that our Constitution was for a religious and moral people. It is wholly inadequate for the governance of any other. And I think that really is the big issue. The bigger issue is the spiritual moral issues. People, if they don't have that moral foundation, it's going to be easy to vote for the person who's going to promise you the most stuff.
Well, we've lost, you know, Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America perspective, which is when we came together in this country, we helped each other.
That's right.
And now we think that we just do this sort of knee-jerk reaction that the government's supposed to do it. I just saw a wonderful Broadway show, Come From Away. Have you ever seen that?
No.
It's about a friend of mine's in it, and it's a wonderful musical, but it's about 9/11 and how a lot of the planes had to be diverted.
Oh, yes.
And how the people just rallied to take care of these 5,000-7,000 people that were stuck there for 4 days. And it's such a beautiful, it's a wonderful, beautiful spiritual play, but it also, there's a sense of community and how people help people. And we've lost that in our country. And instead of taking care of each other, we still do it. I mean, I think we're a very philanthropic people, and we all have our communities of religion and whatnot. But as my mother likes to say, on the whole, I think as a country we have forgotten that the government isn't really supposed, you know, to be the default. We're really supposed to take that under our own wing and help each other.
That's good. I flew out of Logan Airport that same morning and I landed in Detroit, and it was the same thing. People at the churches were full. People were all nice to each other for a few days until things passed. And okay, we're back to normal. Now we only have a few minutes left, so tell us how can people learn about your organization and some of the things you do too.
Well, thank you. And thank you for your Constitution camps. I love that idea.
And we're looking forward to having you, at least you're going to be using Skype or Google Hangout, at the very least.
Yeah.
Keep doing a few classes. We're looking forward to that.
Thank you. I look forward to doing it as well. Well, our website is constitutingamerica.org. And we have a contest, so it's a great summer project. If people would like to enter our contest, it's, you know, $1,000 scholarship for high school kids, $2,000 for college. They get to go on a fantastic trip to Washington, D.C., and they have mentors. But we also, as I said earlier, we take their winning works and promote them in the media. Our songs have had over 100 million plays. So and the public service announcement is about 7 million, I think, is the statistic on television. 7,000 households.
So
constitutingamerica.org. The entries are due Constitution Day, which I know you know when that is.
Yep. It's 17th of
September 17th, right?
Yep. And you have your daughter wrote a great book. We have about 30 seconds left. Can you give the name of the book and where people can get it?
Yes, her book is Our Constitution Rocks, and it breaks down every article, section, and clause for kids. So it was published by HarperCollins.
Excellent.
And that's been really cool, really really fun too.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, and looking forward to hearing from you at Camp Constitution. God bless
you. Thank you. I look forward to seeing you. Okay. Bye.
You've been listening to the Diana Plus Show with your guest host, Hal Shurtleff, on WSMN 1590, the Talk of Nashua.